Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone who is joining us here for our weekly show on Brighteon TV, The Tenpenny Files on Your Health. You know, for the last 22 or 23 years or so, I've given literally thousands of interviews on radio, TV, podcasts, live conferences, seminars, and almost all the time, my information in one way or another has been about vaccinations. But as a trained emergency medicine doctor who is the director of a level two trauma center for 12 years and who's an integrative medicine physician in a very busy practice in Cleveland, Ohio since 1996, there's so many other things to talk about and to discuss. That's why we created this educational show that we will focus on your health. Tonight, your special guest, and I'm so thrilled to have Barbara Lowe Fisher, the co-founder of the National Vaccine Information Center, with us here tonight. We'll be talking about upcoming school mandates for the COVID shots and so much more. You won't want to miss this. We'll be right back.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.
Well, welcome back, everyone. In 1980, Barbara Lowe Fisher's oldest son suffered a convulsion, collapse, and brain inflammation within hours of his fourth DPT when he was 2.5 years old. He was left with multiple learning disabilities. This led to the formation of the National Vaccine Information Center, a nonprofit charity she co-founded with Kathy Williams in 1982. The NVIC has long been the center of vaccination education, leading the way for parents to make informed decisions about vaccines before proceeding with a single shot in the schedule. For the past 4 decades, Barbara has led the National Grassroots Public Information Campaigns, advocating for change in the public health policies to protect children and adults. She has testified in Congress and state legislatures on vaccine policy and law. She has provided a series of written and oral public comments on vaccine science and policy issues for both the federal and the state health agencies. She is well known as one of the world's leading non-medical consumer advocacy experts on vaccination and human rights. Most importantly, Barbara is my mentor and longtime friend. She and the NVIC changed the entire course of my life. So Barbara, thank you so much for welcome to the Tenpenny Files. I can't believe it's been 40 years. It's been 23 years for me. Can you give us an overview on how the NVIC got started and where you think the changes have been since from then till now?
It definitely has been a long journey. I think a lot of people don't really know where this modern movement, this vaccine awareness movement began, because we do have to pay homage to those parents and doctors back in the 1800s and the early 1900s who were protesting against the smallpox vaccine. They really paved the way for the modern, what I call vaccine risk awareness, informed consent movement, whatever you want to call it. But we were parents of DPT vaccine injured children who saw the television documentary DPT Vaccine Roulette in the spring of 1982. And the three co-founders were Kathy Williams, myself, and Jeff Schwartz, whose child actually eventually died in status epilepticus from a DPT vaccine reaction while we were working with Congress on the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. But we came together after that show, and what we wanted, we wanted a less toxic wholesale pertussis vaccine in DPT. And what that vaccine's not used here anymore, because we lobbied for 14 years to get an acellular vaccine to replace it. It took 14 years before they agreed to bring that in, even though Japan had been using the acellular vaccine that is far less toxic. It still can cause brain inflammation. It can still cause seizures. It can still cause immune system problems, but it does so less frequently than the whole cell vaccine. That whole cell vaccine contained endotoxin. It contained pertussis toxin, one of the most toxic ingredients that you can put into a vaccine. It's used to stimulate experimental autoimmune encephalomyelitis in lab animals. It contained mercury. It contained aluminum, one of the most reactive vaccines ever used. And yet they did not want to bring in a less toxic DTaP vaccine. So they dragged their heels for 14 years. So that was really the genesis, was this whole cell vaccine. And then after we organized and we worked with Congress on the 1986 Act, which is a very controversial law that a lot of people don't understand. They don't understand what that law was when it was passed in 86, how hard we fought against total liability protection for these companies. And when that law was passed, there was still design defect liability for these companies. If the Supreme Court in 2011 had not removed design defect liability, we could have sued these companies easily for the mRNA vaccines. The other thing that act when it was passed had was medical malpractice liability for all physicians and all vaccine administrators. But within a year of the law passing, the same congressmen and senators who helped pass the law, who helped create the law, went about with amendments, weakening amendments to gut the law. And they did that over a period of 10 years, starting with letting all the doctors and the vaccine administrators off the hook in December of 1987, and in amendments that we didn't even know were happening. So, you know, what I've learned is that you have to be very, very careful when you go up to Congress, Capitol Hill. You have to be very careful about not being betrayed, because the parents were betrayed in that law. We went forward in good faith. We did get VAERS. We got the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, and that has played a very, very important role in the COVID vaccine story, because the HHS hates that's still a viable system, is still transparently open to the public, which is something we fought for. We wanted the parents to be able to report to that system. We wanted to have it be all the vaccine reactions that are reported to VAERS be publicly, transparently available for people to look at. So I am concerned that they're going to try to either take VAERS down, or they're going to try to make it so it's not accessible for public view. We got the informing and recording provisions. When you go into a doctor's office, they have to write down the name of the vaccine, the vaccine manufacturer's name, and the lot number. Why? Because we knew there were hot lots of DPT vaccine. We knew that the manufacturing standards were not being applied properly, and you could have some vaccine with a whole lot more endotoxin and pertussis toxin in it than other lots of vaccine. And so, you know, we wanted to have that information for parents so that they could have a record of it in case there were hot lots, or their child got a vaccine from a hot lot. The vaccine information statements. Now, those vaccine information statements, I worked on the original crafting of those statements after the law was passed. They were thick. They were booklets.
Wow.
They were one page. But after we created those booklets, and back then it was DPT, MMR, and oral polio vaccine, after we created those booklets, what did they do? Through rulemaking authority that Congress gave them, they went in and they crunched it down to one page, leaving out all kinds of information that people need to make a truly informed decision. So the safety provisions were gutted, the compensation system, which was supposed to be an alternative to a lawsuit, not instead of a lawsuit, an alternative to it, an administrative alternative. They gutted that compensation program so that instead of being an administrative system that where you would have you could show that you had these certain kinds of reactions that are in the medical literature to these vaccines, you would be given automatic compensation. No, They changed the definition of encephalopathy, which is one of the most serious complications of all vaccines, so that almost nobody would qualify under the encephalopathy diagnosis. They also made it so difficult for people to get compensation that everything had to be thrown into the U.S. Court, Federal Court of Claims in D.C., argued like a court trial in front of a special master.
Who knows nothing about vaccines? The special masters, who are lawyers, who are not doctors, they're not even scientists, they're just lawyers that know nothing about what people are talking about. It's supposed to be a no contest, you know, non-adversarial. And as we know, that the government lawyers over the years got to cut their teeth in vaccine court, which is the Federal Court of Claims, to save the government. And if they could do that, then they could get moved up inside of the Department of Justice and make their way up the, you know, the scale. It's just so despicable, Barbara. What, you know, and it's gotten worse with time. I mean, you know, even they've manipulated the COVID data. They were months and months behind uploading reports of injuries, and then they eliminated deaths. They started, you know, taking deaths out. I mean, they have manipulated the system. They really have.
They gutted it. It is not recognizable. The 86 Act is not recognizable. In terms of what we agreed to, what we signed off on. But, you know, the Supreme Court really put the final nail in the coffin. And when you look at what happened there, Bruce versus Wyeth, that was a DPT case. It was argued that they could have made Wyeth could have made a safer vaccine. There was evidence they could have made it less toxic. And the Supreme Court got briefs from the Department of Health and Human Services. They got them from all the vaccine manufacturers, from the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Medical Association, all the pelvic health associations. We had a brief, NVIC had a brief, and there were these parent groups on there. But here's the Supreme Court looking at this entire list of powerful institutions, government, industry, medical trade. And here's these victim groups, these vaccine victim groups. And they went and they threw the people under the bus. Only Justices Sotomayor and Ginsburg, in a brilliant dissent, those two women pointed out that the legislative history made it clear Congress never intended to give the industry complete liability protection, because when they took away the liability protection from the doctors in December of 1987, the companies in hearings kept begging them to give them full liability protection. They knew that they didn't have it. They still were liable for design defects, failure to make a vaccine safer. And yet Congress didn't do it.
Which is also was also part of the original 1986 Act, that every 10 years or less than that, that they were supposed to come before Congress and before Department of Health and Human Services and show documentation that they were working towards making safer vaccines. And it has never been done once ever since the act went into place. Never once. Because they're making safer vaccines. It's sort of like, you know, I use this example sometime. It's like if I made a faulty light bulb, that's what I manufactured, was a faulty light bulb. Well, and every, you know, 40 or 50th time you turn it on, the light bulb blew up and blew glass all over everybody and went in people's eyes and glass went all over the place. But I had complete liability protection for that faulty light bulb. And nobody was going to sue me. It wasn't going to cost me any money. There was nothing that could be done. It's that, you know, you took the risk. You bought the light bulb. So now you're going to also take the risk that every so often one's going to blow up and it's going to cause people to be harmed. And if I have no liability at all, it's just going to happen. Why should I put any money or time into research and development to try to make a safer light bulb? Why? There's no reason for it. And sometimes when you explain it to people like that, they kind of get it.
You know what the argument of the companies were to Congress? The argument was to them, look, if you're going to license the vaccine, you're going to recommend the vaccine, and the states are going to mandate the vaccine, we shouldn't have any liability for that. Mandatory vaccination was the thing that they argued. The government licensed, recommended, and state governments mandated. And I knew early on, because I had to get my son revaccinated to go into a Mother's Day Out program at the local church. He had had his primary series. He was healthy. I didn't go back to the pediatrician. But in order to go to the Mother's Day Out, it was required. So for me, I knew early on that the issue of mandate, or the issue of saying you can't do something if you don't get vaccinated, was very much at the forefront of my consciousness. And I when I saw the companies make that argument, I knew that what we have to do, and I know you and I agree on this, there should be no vaccine mandates.
Never.
There, you know, a product, particularly a product that is liability at this point, liability free, but even if it wasn't liability free, a product that carries a risk of injury or death must be subjected to the informed consent principle. That is, that you have the right to have full information about that product and be able to make a voluntary decision without being coerced or bullied or punished in any way. That's what the informed consent ethic is about. It is the ethic that has underpinned the ethical practice of medicine, at least since Nuremberg. And people go, oh, you can't talk about Nuremberg, the doctor's trial at Nuremberg. Oh, yes, we can talk about it. Because what those judges said, when the doctors that were charged with crimes against humanity, and they argued that we did it for science. We did these experiments to forward science for the greater good, the utilitarian mm-hmm. rationale.
Ooh, we heard that lately.
Those judges said, no, you can't. Utilitarianism is a pseudo-ethic that some can be sacrificed for the rest, for the greater good of society. It's a pseudo-ethic. And certainly Jacobson versus Massachusetts in this country, 1905, with Oliver Wendell Holmes, that great utilitarian eugenicist, sitting on that court, a new member of that court. That decision, when you look at it, that is a purely utilitarian decision, because utilitarian was fashionable in the universities at the time. And yet that is that terribly flawed decision is what is holding all of us captive here in this country. And yet to challenge it would be a big mistake, in my opinion, because I think it would be reaffirmed at least at this time.
I agree with you. You know, I've said for a very long time, actually, we even have a t-shirt that says this in our store. It says the separation between my government, the separation between me and my government begins at the level of my skin. You know, the separation between me and my government is at the level of my skin, which is them to mandatorily require, or not even if it isn't mandatory, it's just required on a softer level, you know, required to, like you said, go to a mother's group thing, go on a mission trip, to play sports. You know, all of these different things, you know, to actually require at whatever level that someone needs to be injected with a product of known toxicity that might even kill you in order to participate in society or in sports or in travel or whatever you're going to do is just at its core wrong. It's ethically and morally wrong.
It's immoral. It's not, you cannot defend that kind of thing. And unfortunately, because people have accepted this utilitarian rationale and have accepted the idea that vaccines are safe and effective, when we know you and I have done the work, have done the research, and I'm not a doctor, but I do know how to read the medical literature. Anybody who has a brain and really wants to learn information can do it. And I try to say to people, look, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to go into the medical literature. Don't be afraid to go into the government documents. You can do this. Because if we don't believe as average people who are non-medical, if we don't believe that we can do it, we are constantly at a disadvantage of having to defer to those people who have titles. And even though the titles, some people wear those titles well, some people abuse those titles, you know? We have given a great deal of power to PhD MDs in this country. And we certainly saw that. We absolutely saw that in the COVID, the response of the government to this COVID pandemic. And what we know now is that science brought us that SARS-CoV mutated virus. And the science got it wrong in terms of how reactive these products are. And I won't even call it a vaccine, because that mRNA COVID biological is not a vaccine. I called it a cell disruptor biological, but if you look at the EU and you look at the regulatory agencies around the world, a product that can force your body to produce a protein, that's a drug. That's called a genetic therapy drug. That's not a vaccine. And yet they were able to get around all of they were able to get around all of the normal protocols and research and evidence that they would have to produce for that kind of drug. They were able to get around it by calling it a vaccine.
Yeah, they stole and co-opted that word, you know, just because then everybody thought it was just like a flu shot and it's going to keep you from getting sick. And it does none of those things. I mean, we've talked about that a lot. You know, back to what you said about parents can just jump in and do this. They can. I mean, for 17, 18, 19, and 20, for 4 years, my business partner, Matt, and I did a Mastering Vaccine Info boot camp twice a year that we talked about. You know, the first two sessions of the boot camp were safe and effective. And then the second two sessions were, what about smallpox and what about polio? Because the discussion always starts there with brand new people. And then it was the ramp up of the schedule and how to read a package insert. And for the listeners, all of those courses are still available at our sister site, which is Learning for You, learning4you.org. And the one that I think has been pretty popular lately is how to read a package insert. Because, you know, we tell everybody to do that, Barbara. We tell people, you know, go read the package insert. Well, if you are not medically minded or you don't have, you know, some sort of medical background, and you unfold this thing that gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's size 2 font, and it lays out on a table. If you don't have some idea of what you're looking at or where to start and how to interpret it, it can be pretty overwhelming. So the How to Read a Package Insert course that we do on learningforyou.org takes you through what the important sections are. And the thing about a package insert, they're actually created. The FDA says when you go and read about a package insert, they're actually created for the doctors. The doctors are supposed to learn this and know what this is. They're the ones who are supposed to read it and understand that section 11 in a package insert is where the ingredients are, and that and it's the same whether it's a vaccine package insert or a blood pressure medication package insert or something, an antibiotic. When you roll them out, they're laid out. There's a pattern for which they're supposed to stay. So you can use that for all your different needs. So thank you for putting that up there, Hannah. Appreciate that. You know, to show people that we just finished our 5 Docs boot camp. We just finished that a couple of weeks ago. But the learningforyou.org, that's a sister site where a lot of our educational programs are. Lee Merritt creates programs for us. We've got some other people that create programs for us. But if you want to read a package insert, that's a place to go. So we're going to be right back. We need to take a short commercial break here. And when we come back, more discussion with Barbara Lowe Fisher of the National Vaccine Information Center. We're going to talk about the other thing they do besides education. They do a lot with advocacy. And we're going to talk about what they've done in the last 10 years. It's been so important. You won't want to miss this. You'll be right back.
We started working about a year ago with Layla Ali's private label spice line.
And I just think I loved Layla. I think she's just an amazing woman. She's a really incredible and high integrity businesswoman. And when I first spoke to her about these spices that she was creating, it just resonated with me. She said, so many people go out and shop every single day. They read labels on everything and everything needs to be organic. And they want the best possible foods for their family. And then they go home and they sprinkle toxic chemicals on them that they buy from various spice vendors. So she got this idea to build an entire line of organic spices.
that the ingredients in these spices are as close to organic, 100% organic, as she can possibly make them. They're clean. They don't have any additives. They're wonderful tasting. They have pepper. They have a taco blend. They have a garlic seasoning blend. You can buy them individually, or you can get them in sets of 3, 5, or 6. They're a wonderful gift. If you're looking for a gift for someone for a holiday or a birthday or for some special reason, to get them something kind of different. And particularly if your friend is a foodie, they will really love these spices because they are so clean. And so you can use our affiliate code, which is DRT. If you go to LaylaAli.com and you put in our affiliate code DRT, you'll get 15% off your first purchase. And I think it's something that you're going to want to keep in your cupboard for a long time ahead. Well, welcome back, everyone. Thank you for joining us here this evening on the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. We're having an incredible conversation with my mentor and my colleague and my friend, Barbara Lowe Fisher, one of the co-founders of the National Vaccine Information Center in Washington, D.C., which has been the voice of parents and parental decisions for a long year and has always been very big on education. But there's another arm of the NVIC that people don't realize what they have done in the last 10, 20 years for state legislatures and what's happening there. Barbara, welcome back this evening. And I'd like for you to talk a little bit about the NVIC advocacy portal, because it's been so important to this point, but I believe it's going to be even more important going forward.
Right. Well, you're right. NVIC has been dedicated to mainly two areas. Education, and we have 4 websites. I don't even know most people understand. We have NVIC.org, which is our mothership, and that is dates from 1995. Our website was created at the same time as the CDC's website. So we're one of the oldest websites on the internet, and certainly one of the only ones that presents a consumer view of vaccines and diseases. But we also have the vaccinereaction.org, which is our weekly journal newspaper at the vaccinereaction.org. And we have MedAlerts, which is a search engine for the VAERS system. And that's been around since 2006. We've been sponsoring that since 2006. So you can go on and to MedAlerts.org, and you can read the reports that are coming into VAERS. It's a friendly search engine for you to use to search the VAERS system. But what you're talking about is our other website, which is NVICadvocacy.org. That website and that program has been around since 2010. And Don Richardson, who was the founder and director of PROVE, Parents Requesting Open Vaccine Education in Texas, she and I worked in the 1990s on the conscientious belief exemption in Texas. And it took her 7 years. And I remember talking with her in the 90s about, she was just a young mom with a little baby, and she was amazing. She was an amazing lobbyist there in Texas. And in around 2009, you remember the swine flu that was supposed to, I mean, they tried. That was a sand table exercise for sure. They tried to get everybody to wear masks and to, you know, be real scared, but it didn't really work. But around that time, I asked Dawn if she would come and she would do for national, the other states, what she did in Texas. Because what we've always wanted is conscientious belief vaccine exemption in every state. We were going for exemptions. I don't think that we should have any mandates at this point. Why don't I believe that? Well, for one thing, we tried to get exemptions, and what did they do? The other side, our adversaries just decided they were going to take all the exemptions away. I mean, that's what they certainly have done since 2015-16, is try to take all the exemptions away. So if they're going to do that and they're not going to allow informed consent, allow us to have exemptions, then we shouldn't have any laws, in my view. At any rate, Dawn came in and she and her husband created this website that is what I call an advocacy tool. And it's geared to states, basically geared to states. And it has your own state legislator. You can get in contact with your own state legislator very easily through the NVIC advocacy portal. It's free. You sign up to be a registered user of the portal. And you will get in your email box when pertinent legislation is pending in your state that will either expand or will threaten your informed consent rights when it comes to vaccination. Now, that legislation may be, for example, a strengthening of a vaccine tracking, electronic tracking system in your state. Because we know that they have created these electronic vaccine tracking systems. They started out in cities back in the 1990s, 10 cities. Then they went to the states, and they're hooking all the states up to a national electronic vaccine tracking system. It's really through your electronic health records. And the ultimate goal, which is something I wrote about in 1999, is to hook that up to a global electronic vaccine tracking system so that they can share the information with all other countries. And of course, we know the digital ID that the World Health Organization wants everyone to have. And the European Union has signed on to that as of a couple months ago, I think. So it's coming, but we still are fighting in the states.
I just want to say for the listeners, the advocacy portal is amazing. And Dawn is a longstanding friend of mine. In fact, I met her when I went to that first conference in September of 2000. She was standing on the stage. She was pregnant. She's like 9 months pregnant. And she's up there, you know, huffing and puffing away, giving her presentation. And Dawn and I have been really good friends for a long time. And she works so hard on this. And for people to sign up, I mean, I really want to encourage all the listeners to sign up for it by going to the NVIC advocacy portal. No, it's advocacy.org, right? NVICadvocacy.org. And what's really cool about it is when you sign up for your state, you only get alerts about your state. So you're not going to be spammed and your inbox isn't going to be overwhelmed because you happen to live in Oklahoma and you're getting messages about Tennessee and Montana and Arizona that really don't apply to you at all. So it makes it very unique and very focused on how you can get involved on boots on the ground level to be able to do that. And so what has the advocacy arm of the NVIC been able to do and to roll forward since 2010?
Well, I tell you, we've held back the elimination of vaccine exemptions in many states. We've lost some because there was such a press by the pro-vaccination lobby in states like Connecticut, Maine, California. It's been, you know, they are trying to go state by state and take away all the religious and the philosophical or conscientious belief exemption, leaving only a medical exemption that's been so narrowed by the CDC that almost nothing qualifies for a medical exemption. So they did the same thing when I was talking about what they did with encephalopathy. The definition of encephalopathy and the compensation program, making it so that nothing applied, almost nothing applied. They did the same thing with the medical exemption, so that there's almost no contraindications, medical contraindications to vaccines anymore. What does that leave if they take the religious and conscience exemption or philosophical exemption? It means that you have forced vaccination with no ability to opt out. And so, you know, we saw them, what they did with the lockdowns and with what the Biden administration did in terms of putting out a mandate that all the federal employees, all the contractors that did business with government, if a corporation had more than 100 employees, they were pressing them to make COVID vaccine a condition of employment. We know what the end game is. We know what the alliance between industry, government, and medical trade wants to do. And that is, you will get all the federally recommended vaccines, or you won't be able to participate in society. And you know what really did my heart good? I was so proud of all the work that had been done by so many families across this country. And I was proud of our portal because no state legislature in this country voted for a COVID vaccine mandate as a condition of school attendance. That is an historic accomplishment. And I think, you know, it other countries just fall, you know, that don't have a decentralized government like we do, where we have in the Constitution, we have a federal government, we have state government, we have local government. It was the state government level that we were able to stop the mandate. Now, there were some governors, there were some mayors, et cetera, that mandated. There's some colleges that mandated, but no state legislature voted. And I do believe it's because we've been in the state legislatures educating them about informed consent.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, these policies, like I just read something a couple of days ago, that there's still 93 colleges across the country that are requiring COVID shots for matriculation into college. And, you know, back, I can think it was about 2008, Barbara, that, you know, everybody who follows me knows this story where they say, well, how did you get involved with this? I said, well, I went to the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C. in 2000. And you said before we started here today that you found that flyer. Yeah. Found that flyer from 2000.
I found the program. In fact, I found the program. I met you in 2000 at the second International Public Conference on Vaccination, because we had held our first one in 97. And then this one, which is in 2002, you spoke at our third International Public Conference of Vaccination. And at that conference, Bernie Rimland was given an award. Of course, he's very famous. We had some incredible, incredible speakers over the years between 1997 and 2009. And then, of course, when we held our fifth International Public Conference on Vaccination in October of 2020, which you also spoke at, that was taken by the Center for Countering Digital Hate, Imra Mohammed. And obviously what was an orchestrated effort, they took that conference, they told lies about the conference, that it was a secret conference, that it was like a meeting of conspiracy theorists it was not a secret conference. It was an open public conference like all of our conferences, widely publicized, accessible to anybody who could, and it, for very little cost. But we had to build a new website that was sabotage proof, because we knew we would be sabotaged. And after that conference was held, you know, the publishing of the anti-vax playbook, I was number one on that publication in NBIC and my name. And between March of 2020 and September of 2020, NBIC was removed from all four major social media platforms, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And in December of 2020, one night, we were called by Network for Good that processed our donations, had been processing them for more than a decade. And we were told, in the middle of our end of year fundraising campaign, December 21st of 2020, we were told that no donations would be processed from here on out because PayPal had said no more and would not give an explanation. We had no idea why we were pulled, no idea at all. And then I found out that the House of Representatives, Democrat Party, 22 Democrat members, had written a letter to the CEO of PayPal and asked for NBIC and Barbara Lowe Fisher, cut them off, no more donations. And I thought, you know, I sat on government vaccine advisory committees as a consumer member for more than 20 years. I went to those meetings at the request of the Department of Health and Human Services. I sat on the Institute of Medicine Vaccine Safety Forum for 4 years as a consumer member, trying to make presentations, telling them that they needed to do the science that would find out why some people cannot get, why these children, some of them cannot get through the process of vaccination without being harmed. Do the science that they promised us they would do. And I thought, if somebody who has tried to work within the system, tried to participate in the government, can be erased. We were completely ghosted online. All of my commentaries gone from YouTube. All of our information blocked. And I thought to myself, you know, this isn't right. What does that say to the average American who wants to try to make a change? You know, it's disappointing to say the least, but I still believe, Sherry, I still believe that if the people will stand up and will have the courage to have these conversations in their own communities with their families, because as you know, families have been broken up, people have gotten divorced, sisters and brothers aren't speaking to each other. I mean, there has been such an incredible destruction of the social fabric over the issue of vaccination and mandatory vaccination, actually, that, you know, it's something that has far-reaching consequences, I believe. And so I do believe that if we stay the course, like we have, you know, all these years, if we stay the course and enough people wake up and enough people have the courage to stand up, that we can make the changes that we need to. It just takes perseverance, courage, and commitment. And, you know, I know that you're committed, I'm committed, and, you know, you just have to get up every day and do the next right thing.
Yeah, and I think that kind of sums it up. You know, it doesn't surprise me, but yet it does surprise me with what you just said. It doesn't surprise me about the censorship and the shutdown. I mean, I was permanently banned from PayPal. I don't know, 2020. You know, I had been building a podcast platform on Podbean. You know, in 8 months we had built it up to 1 million downloads. And on the very day that I got the autoresponder from Podbean that said, "Congratulations, you've reached 1 million downloads," they wiped my account. They didn't. You know, it wasn't like, you know, you could go into like Twitter jail or Facebook jail, just completely gone, you know, and can't do anything back again. So, I mean, the censorship about what and the targeted censorship on the people they really wanted to shut down because they had an agenda and still do have an agenda of injecting foreign matter into every human across the country. You know, when they started, remember, Barbara, I believe it was in 2004 when they started advocating the flu shot at 6 months of age for children. And it was because they kind of left their behind flapping out there in the wind about the flu shot, because unless it's on the pediatric schedule, it's not protected by the Injury Compensation Act. And they're like, "Oh, wait, stop. You know, we've got all these flu shot people that were given to adults and we're not protected. Oh, I know. We'll fix that. We'll start giving it to 6-month-old babies. And if you're a 7-year-old and you haven't had a shot yet, you get 2 of them." And, you know, all the multi-dose vials still have mercury in them. You know, and so it's just absolutely and I really felt like back in 2015, when SB 277 went down in California, which for the listeners, SB 277 is when they took away the religious exemption in the state of California, under the promise they wouldn't take away the medical exemption, which they did the next year when they passed SB 278 or SB 276 and then SB 277. I felt so strongly at that point in time. The reason that happened was because we had been making great strides. I always knew that this could never change from the top up. It had to be a grassroots, bottom-up level. Right. And between what you and Kathy and Dawn and, you know, your different chapters and different people was doing, what I was doing, what even the autism community was doing and really educating people, I really felt that there was a big swell. And they had done a few surveys that were published in the Journal of Pediatrics that said that 57% of parents, now keep in mind this was 2015 or 14, that 50% of parents were beginning to question the whole vaccine paradigm and all of it. I mean, like, does my kid really need all of these? And that there was a larger percentage of people, like maybe 72%, that said, "Well, I really just want to pick and choose the diseases I would like my children protected against." And this was causing total disruption of their go, because someday I'm going to get around to writing about this, is that, you know, the vaccines are the economic loss leader of the entire industry. You know, and for the listener, what an economic loss leader is, it's like if you're walking down the street and there's a store that's open, it says, "Hey, come in here and I'll give you a free, just walk in the door and I'll give you a free t-shirt." And so you're like, "Hey, that's kind of cool. I'll walk in and get a free t-shirt." But while you're there, they're going to try to sell you a $1,000 Armani suit. So that's what happens in the vaccine industry. Come on in. Well, it doesn't cost you anything. Public health will pay for it. We've got all these things. It doesn't cost you anything. But once you capture, they capture your child, now they will sell them the $1,000 Armani suit, meaning all the drugs and everything needed for asthma, allergies, eczema, seizure disorders, autoimmune disease, cancer, and all this other stuff. We'll give you a free shot so that we can get you into our system and make money off of you for the rest of your life. And I really felt like we were really making headway. And the only, so it was like, okay, great. You think that you can get away with this? Well, we'll just take away your right to refuse. We'll just take away your right to refuse. And that started kind of, at least that was a piece of it. I can't say that was all of it, but at least that was a big piece of why the machine started to take away our rights to refuse.
Well, certainly the measles. Measles at Disneyland in 2015, which was the impetus for
fabricated,
that.
It was all fabricated. Yep.
It was amazing. You know, if you look back in history, even just beyond the 40 years, but you see that every time that they want to change something, either bring out a new vaccine or take away exemptions or whatever, they create an outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
They did it back yep. in the 80s when we were working with Congress. They created pertussis outbreaks, or they say that there were 8 states that had, the American Heavy Pediatrics said, 8 states had raging whooping cough epidemics. You know what I did? I communicated with the health directors of each one of those states in snail mail, because that's what we communicated with. And I asked them for the numbers of cases and epidemiologically linked FA, fluorescent antibody confirmed, culture confirmed. They sent it to me. I also asked for the vaccination stats, how many shots did the person get and what their ages were. They sent it to me. I created a report about these whooping cough outbreaks. Guess what? The majority of the people were vaccinated.
Of course they were. And usually it was 2 or 3 pertussis shots. Well, Barbara, we have so many things. We'll have to come back again and continue this conversation. But we've got about a minute left. I just want you to wrap up for just, you know, 30 seconds or so and tell people about the NVIC, where they can find you and where they can follow your work.
Yes. Our main website is NVIC.org for National Vaccine Charity. We depend upon donations. If you like what you see and what you get from us, please make a donation. Also, please sign up to be a user of the NVIC Advocacy Portal at nvicadvocacy.org, because that's your way of getting engaged in your community and educating your legislators about why informed consent to vaccination is important to you. So I hope you all will follow us. And thank you so much, Dr. Tenpenny.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And thank you for everybody for being here tonight. This has just been amazing. And, you know, it's back to school. They're talking about all these shots going back to school. And so NVIC has all the information for you about, quite frankly, in my opinion, why you shouldn't do it. And we have a big page on drtenpenny.com about homeschooling, you know, and all the homeschooling interviews and things that we've done. You can find that if you go to drtenpenny.com under the education tab. So with that, I want to thank everybody who comes here on Monday nights. You know, Monday night is Bridie on Tuesday morning. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. is Tuesday morning coffee with Dr. T. So we hope to see you there. It's open forum, question and answer. Bring your questions. And it's always a really fun time. So with that, I always close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible, whether my broadcasts are pre-recorded or live, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until the next time, remember to lean into God and trust Him for everything. He won't let you down. So with that, stick around for an extra minute or two and see some special announcement from our sponsors for this week. Then mark your calendar for next Monday night, same place, same time, 7 p.m. Eastern time for the next episode of the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. Thank you again, Barbara, for joining us this evening. Take care and God bless. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places.
Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant. You can take it when you're nursing. You can give it to little children. You can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out, the heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years.
Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off.
Gold and silver always has value. It never goes to zero. And it's a great place to store your wealth. It's a great place to have it for inheritance, for your children, for your grandchildren. And when you can actually get the coins itself, when you can actually do that, you can actually even have a coin collection. I think that some of the older Walking Liberty silver dollars are just amazing that come from the early 1900s. And I think that everybody should have some of those, not only for history, but as a place to protect your wealth, protect your money going forward. It never goes to zero. Like our paper fiat money with hyperinflation and the things that we may be seeing in the future, our dollar could literally go to zero, could be worth nothing. You might even not even be able to barter with it, but you will always have value in gold and silver. You'll always be able to eat with it. You'll be able to trade with it. And it's a great place to store your wealth. Particular company that we work with because we really, again, trust their product. We believe that this company has a high level of integrity and they are great with customer service. To learn more, go to bit.ly/gold-silver-DRT. That's bit.ly/gold-silver-DRT. There are an awful lot of people that are affiliates for Mike Lindell because we all really appreciate what he does for this country. We appreciate the hard work that he does, and we appreciate his products. He has more than 200 products in his store, everything from pillowcases and comforters to doggy beds and to wonderful slippers and bathrobes. There's something for everybody and something for everybody in each age group. I mean, one of the things that I really like a lot are the pillowcases, the children's Bible story pillowcases that I just think are such a great way when you tuck your child into bed at night to use these pillowcases that they come from his store to start to tell the story about Adam and Eve and Noah and the Ark and different things. And they're colorful and they're really pretty. So from children all the way up to, gentlemen that want to have like nice slippers or to your dog, the doggy beds and things are just wonderful. So my pillow is a great place to shop for just about anything that you want. And if you use our affiliate code DRT, that helps us, that can benefit us, that helps Mike Lindell, and you'll get a great product for anybody that you're shopping for.